have such sights to show you. Common Craig, a horror, trash, sci-fi, action podcast. Allow this to be your cure as well.
All right, Nicole, here we are with Ookla. Poppy's over there. Op is in the other room. We're going to try something new on the podcast, Nicole. We're going to try to do a watch-along.
Oh, man.
And this is the first time trying this. We're not sure how this is going to turn out, but we're going to give it a shot. We got some notes here.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about a movie that we teased we were going to have in the festival. The 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival, back during our Summer of Clive series of episodes, because this is a Clive Barker movie, Nicole.
Okay.
Yeah. He directed this movie. It's based on his novella, The Hellbound Heart, which was originally published in 1986 in a anthology series of books or something called Night Visions in England. It came out here after that, just as a novella, The Hellbound Heart.
Okay.
So, we're going to try to do a watch-along here. For the sake of our listeners, to try to help out, if people want to watch along with us, that's kind of the point of this,
yeah,
is you watch the movie with us while
you're
we're
watch
watching
the
movie.
The movie with us. It's like you're right here on the couch next to me.
Oh, weird. With Ookla.
With Ookla.
And also
a bunch of cats.
Yes, a bunch of cats, yes. So what we're doing here is watch along. We have this movie on the very fine, Nicole, Arrow video release contained in a box set called The Scarlet Box. The Hellraiser Scarlet Box. But this is available on Hulu currently. We kind of wanted to do a watch-along. I was tempted to do it with Scanners, but it wasn't really very readily available on like any streaming services or anything like that. So I thought maybe that's not the best time to try it. But Hellraiser, this is a little bit more accessible. You should be able to find a copy of Hellraiser pretty easily if you would want to. You could rent it. You can watch it if you subscribe to Hulu. That's where we're going to watch it.
Okay.
Because this will kind of be a shared experience with the listeners. What we're going to do is we've started it on Hulu. So we're going to start at zero. We're going to tell you when we're hitting play.
Okay.
Okay? So currently it's beyond the Hulu intro thing where it says, this movie has been rated R because it has graphic violence and this kind of stuff. So what's going to happen is we're going to hit play, we're going to start, we're going to watch the movie, we're going to talk about the movie as we're watching it. We don't always do this with movies. We don't have a dialogue running during every movie we watch.
No.
We want the listeners to understand
It's kind of weird. I'm going to feel a little weird talking
like during we're ruining the movie.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point of this exercise. So we'll see how this works. We'll see if the listeners enjoy it. If you hate it, if we hate it, maybe we'll never do it again. If we like it, maybe we'll try it again with something else.
Okay.
So, all right, we're about to start. Like I said, we're watching it on Hulu, but if you watch it on a DVD or something, it should be, you know, a similar time frame.
Pretty comparable.
So what's going to happen, yes, when we hit play, is it's going to go into the New World Pictures logo. So you'll see that kind of start coming on the screen, and I'll give you a time sync at maybe like when the title sequence comes up.
So right now, though, it's at like 1 hour, 33 minutes, and 20 seconds.
And 20 seconds on Hulu is what it says is remaining. The beginning time is right at zero. So we're going to press play in 3, 2,
this is Skype.
1. Play. Okay, so the New World logo has begun to roll. And we're getting into Hellraiser, Nicole, from 1987. So the movie runs approximately 1 hour and 34 minutes. It's rated R, Nicole. This is an R-rated movie, New World Pictures. The logo was just there. So, Nicole, have you seen this movie before?
Yes, I have quite a while ago.
The title is coming up. It says Clive Barker's Hellraiser. This is currently 36 seconds into it, just for a little time cue there. All right, well, so what did you think of Hellraiser in the past when you've seen it, Nicole?
I remember being a little squeamish.
A little squeamish.
Time.
Why is that?
Just because of the flesh rending.
a lot of flesh going on in this movie.
Yeah.
Right now, during this intro, you can't hear it now because, you know, we're not trying to listen to the movie loud enough so that you can hear it due to copyright reasons. So that's why you're watching it with us. You'll listen to this later. You'll find out later when you're watching it if you're listening to us. So there's a score going over the opening credits here by right there. It says music composed by Christopher Young. Christopher Young, this score is kind of an orchestral score, a traditional sort of musical score, Nicole.
A little, you know, creepy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a little creepy, cool. Of course. Yeah. Originally,
suspenseful,
Nicole,
I guess.
Did you know that Clive Barker had asked the experimental industrial band Coil to do the score for this? We'll get back to them in a minute. Right now, we have the puzzle box, the Lament configuration is what it's called, sitting there on a table. We've got a couple of guys here that are
dirty fingernails.
Absolutely filthy fingernails. I knew we were going to talk about this. Both sets of hands are really dirty. He's handing over a large chunk of cash here, Nicole. Yeah. That looks like several thousand. That's more than several hundred, Nicole. Several thousand dollars.
Hundreds.
And here we're introduced to Frank. This is Sean Chapman playing Frank. And he's investigating this box.
So does
Nicole.
He know what the box does?
What is this? I guess he must have some idea. He must have heard about this to seek it out, don't you think?
I guess.
The box is moving, Nicole.
How would you know what
it
was due?
The box is moving? Is this normal?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think that something terrible...
He hears something.
...is about to happen.
Oh, man.
But yeah, some nice cinematography here with the light coming in through those boards, those shutters. I don't know what those were exactly there.
He cleaned his hands, though. The fingernails are much cleaner.
His fingernails are still, like, too long for my liking, but yes, they're much cleaner. That's good. This is my favorite position for the box. My favorite position is this one here, where he's about to, I'd like that kind of diamond shape for the box. That's a good look. Oh, yeah, and see?
Oh, yeah. That's fish hooks in the neck or something?
Yes.
Man.
Oh.
Now that kitchen needs to be cleaned a little.
Yeah, the kitchen needs a little work. You're right. And really, the whole house needs a little bit of work. There's a roach. And a little figurine of some nudes.
Some trash bags. Yeah.
He doesn't have this house in very good shape. And here, yes, we
those
see...
Those chains with flesh on them don't look very good either.
Some meaty chains.
Ears, weirdness,
other human parts attached to these rotating, spinning pillars. And here we have the first appearance of a Cenobite. Nicole, that is the female Cenobite played in this movie by Grace Kirby. And who is that, Nicole?
Grace Kirby?
No. Who is that that was just on screen? You didn't even see it. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, that's the first appearance of the most iconic figure from Hellraiser. And you totally missed it.
I'm sorry. Pinhead, you mean.
Who's Grace Kirby? You don't know who Grace Kirby is. Yes.
Look, she's putting, like, his face back together.
I'm pretty sure, yeah, that's supposed to be Pinhead putting that Frank face back together like a puzzle. Apparently, they wanted that effect to dissolve, like his face to dissolve, but they couldn't get it to work quite well, so they just ended up using it as kind of like a puzzle piece, his face being reassembled. But yes, Doug Bradley playing, not Pinhead, Nicole, the lead Cenobite.
Okay.
He was not referred to as Pinhead in the movie. That's something that came about. Fans who saw the movie ended up naming him Pinhead. So back to Coyle for a second. Coyle, industrial, experimental band.
I really like them.
Yeah, Love Secret Domain, that's probably my favorite Coyle album, along with Horse Rotor Vader. Those are probably my two favorites. But yeah, the producer, Tony Randall, he didn't care for what they had done. He thought the demos were too experimental, too odd, and asked if they had any, you know, experience putting together a score for a movie that was scene specific or, you know, cut specific as far as when the music would kind of cue in on specific sections of the movie. And they really didn't. They hadn't done it before. So that kind of scared off the producers a little bit, even though Clive Barker really wanted them to do it. So they ended up hiring Christopher Young. And the score is very, very good. There's no question about it. It's just a more conventional orchestral score. Coyle did later release some of the tracks that were intended. They were kind of the demos that were intended to be sort of, this is what we're planning on doing for the movie. They released them later on as kind of the unreleased Hellraiser tracks. We have Andrew Robinson here playing the character Larry Cotton, and Claire Higgins as Julia. They are a married couple, Nicole.
Okay.
Andrew Robinson, at this point, like his prior most famous role was probably in Dirty Harry as the villain in Dirty Harry. Scorpio was the character's name.
So they want to move into the house then, basically.
Yes, this is a family house that they're going to move into here. And I guess, yeah, there's like some, you know, odd religious iconography just placed around the house. I don't know if, did Frank put this here? You know, we don't know. And Frank, we will discover, is Larry's brother.
She just put a cigarette out on the floor.
Right on the floor. That shows her respect for the family home right here. But yeah, apparently Julia, maybe she's not that crazy with what she's seeing in here in the house, is what it looks like, right?
Yeah, she doesn't appreciate the religious icons.
Here, Larry's going to find something that you're going to love, Nicole.
Oh, great.
A writhing mass of, you guessed it, right there.
Oh, maggots. Some how lovely.
Wonderful maggots and a huge roach crawling out of some rotten food or something there.
Those are really big maggots.
Yeah, they're pretty big. Pretty big.
Like, the maggots that I've seen are smaller, like grains of rice.
The ones that you've had on your hands before were much smaller than that?
Yeah.
I'm just
like,
kidding.
If you pick walnuts or something, you get a maggot on your hand.
Yuck. Why are maggots in walnuts anyway?
Oh, because it's rotten if they're on the floor.
So we've got this little sexual figurine that Larry says, well, this has got to be Frank's. You know, he's been here. You and your maggots. You think there was a maggot wrangler on this movie that rounded those little guys up?
Isn't that, you know, there's always a somebody's animal
job.
Wrangler.
It had to be somebody's job.
You know, everything looks very filthy. Like, yes. The bedding there.
And here on the phone now is Kirstie, played by Ashley Lawrence, who is the daughter of Larry in this movie. But not Julia. Julia is the stepmother.
Evil stepmother?
I guess that's somewhat subjective based on your opinion, Nicole, but I would say so. Yes, this, in my mind, Julia is supposed to be the wicked, you know, stepmother or an evil queen or something. So we see Julia upstairs as Larry and Kirstie are on the phone. She's kind of going through Frank's stuff, looking at some photographs that she finds. Some pictures of Frank with various lovers, it looks like. And we know now, yes, that Frank, because of that photo, Frank is the guy we saw earlier with the puzzle box.
Yeah.
If we haven't seen this before, we didn't know that, but I, of course, told people that.
Wonder why she's stealing that photo.
I think that's going to be revealed. I think we're going to find that out. Yeah. So Frank and Julia, a little bit of a contentious relationship here, it seems like, based on this house. But they're going to move in.
Sunday.
They're going to move in.
Man, that's a lot of cleaning to do before then.
Yes, Nicole. Julia's still cleaning up, going through some things. Larry is helping these moving men bring in this mattress into the house.
Those are some and snazzy plaid pants.
Apparently, Doug Bradley has said that he was offered the chance to either play the lead Cenobite, Pinhead, or the moving man here, the younger moving man, who's on the left side of the screen here. And he decided, you know, like, well, you know, it might be nice to have, like, you know, my face without makeup on screen, you know, and I can tell people, hey, you know, like, I was in Hellraiser, that's me right there. But he said, you know, ultimately, you know, that thought crossed his mind for like a couple of seconds. And then he was like, no, come on, like the lead Cenobite character is the much more interesting character to play. So, you know, that's what I have to go with.
Yeah.
Here we see Kirstie walking through something along the side of a river, I guess. Nicole, Hellraiser had a budget originally of $1 million. It opened at number 3 in the United States, September 18th, 1987, behind Fatal Attraction, which was number 1, and The Pickup Artist with Molly Ringwald and Robert Downey Jr., which was number 2. But it opened at $4.5 million, ended up making $14.6 million worldwide. So on a $1 million budget for like a small independent horror film, that's not bad. From a first-time director. Here we see Kirstie. They've eliminated some of the religious iconography. She kind of gets a kick out of seeing it at the curb. The younger moving man here that is on the left is actually played by the actor Oliver Parker, who was later in Clive Barker's Nightbreed, playing the character Peliquin. And then he later went on to become a director and directed those St. Trinian's movies we talked about. Yeah, we talked about that before. That you enjoyed those. So Kirstie's come to the house. We kind of learn here through some dialogue that maybe Kirstie and Julia, you know, they don't always get along that well, possibly.
I'd like to have a beer. We should have got beer before the movie started.
Well, I'm sorry, you're stuck with water. And here we see Julie again, studying this photo of Frank. What's the deal with Julie and Frank here,
Nicole? I don't
know.
Maybe something happened.
Maybe something happened.
Oh, she's tearing the woman out, so.
Yes, tearing away Frank's lover from the photograph, so only Frank is remaining here. Oh, and here we seem to have a flashback with Julia and Frank.
A younger Julia
A younger Frank.
And a younger Frank. Different hairstyle.
So, they know each other. They've met before. And really, what Hellraiser is, Nicole, as we're going to find out very soon here, is, you know, the Cenobites, they're always in the posters. You know, it's always Pinhead. Pinhead is the icon from the movie. Mm-hmm. But the movie's not really about the Cenobites. Pinhead, the character, the lead Cenobite, Doug Bradley, really, he has probably total about 10 minutes of screen time. So really, he's only in it for a little while, and the other Cenobites as well. So the movie, what it's really about is Frank and Julia and their forbidden love, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Forbidden love, forbidden lust. So it's really a movie about romance, almost, in a way.
It's a romance movie.
But really more about, like, sexual obsession.
So is she hiding from...
Yeah, it doesn't seem like she's interested in dealing with her right now because she's caught up in her thoughts of Frank.
Okay.
So Julia doesn't want to deal with Kirstie right now.
Yeah.
You know, she's in her own head right now thinking about Frank. Where is Frank gone? Is he still around? We're in this room, and I'm also kind of confused about, like, this room is, like, completely in shambles. Like, the windows and the walls are kind of falling apart.
Like, the windows are, like, newspapered over, you know?
What do you think that room was supposed to be?
Just a dead room.
Just a dead room, Nicole. Oh, and see here.
Gonna kiss the bride.
Yeah, he's... And this is going to be Larry's wife.
She's actually very, like, it's very lustful.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I said. Forbidden love and lust, Nicole. And yeah, Sean Chapman's Frank here. It seems like Larry is just kind of like this, you know, boring kind of average guy, Nicole. Poor Larry. But Sean Chapman's Frank here certainly seems to be like the more stimulating, charismatic character between the two brothers, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, Julia's like totally like, yeah.
Sucked in.
Yeah. She'll do whatever at this point. And even thinking back on this, you know. And yeah.
Man.
Nicole's giving me a look during this scene. Right on the wedding dress, Nicole.
Right on the wedding dress.
And yeah, I always think this is an interesting juxtaposition of scenes. You've got Larry struggling, bringing, like, their mattress that they would presumably make love on into the house. He's struggling to get it into the house while Julie is thinking about this past sexual experience with Frank on the wedding dress. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting back and forth where she's obsessing over Frank.
Oh, I'm nervous about this nail.
And he's struggling so hard just to get the mattress... their mattress into the house.
Oh, yes, I knew it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And that, of course, you know, tears open. This nail tears open poor Larry's hand. So he needs Julia now for comfort to help him out because he
apparently ripped his hand open.
Doesn't care for blood, the sight of blood, and ripping his hand open. Which I could say you would agree with that would be kind of an uncomfortable situation. What about the tetanus, Nicole?
He's gonna get lockjaw.
Yeah, come on.
That's bleeding an awful lot.
Oh, yeah. And here, yeah, we see he enters this room that's falling apart with Julia, who had, like, been in there with the door closed. Blood's dripping on the floor. And, you know, the camera really kind of pointed that out, didn't it, Nicole?
Yeah.
We were supposed to see that blood hitting the floor. I feel like that's foreshadowing something.
Yeah. Is it going to soak in?
Oh, man, look at that wound. That's not good. Is it going to soak in? What are you talking about?
Soak into the floor.
I can't tell you that.
So, like, they should put some pressure on that.
Yes. Let's get you to the hospital. Ooh, there's some blood squelching now, Nicole, according to the subtitles.
There, see, it's soaking in. I knew it. The floorboards drank the blood.
And now, we have here, we're going under the floorboards, and we see something organic under here, kind of pulsating. Oh my gosh, now Kirsty has to drive them to the hospital, because Larry's in a bad way with this hand. And now I'm afraid, Nicole, we're going to cut back upstairs to those floorboards. So apparently, the studio, New World, when they saw what Clive Barker had put together as far as a movie, and I guess what they call like the rushes, you know, they'd see like certain scenes of, you know, before post-production of what had been shot. They saw some of the work that they had done and they were like, wow, you know, like this is pretty good. They said, but, you know, I think we should give them some more money for some more special effects. So they specifically gave them more money after seeing it for this scene. The scene that's coming up right here where these floorboards are coming up. There's rats in the room. There's ooze coming up out of the floor.
Ugh.
So originally, I'm going to spoil things here, but, you know, it's coming up right here. Yeah, you see something's coming out of the floorboard. Something is alive, being reborn, essentially, here, being put back together. Well, you're going to find out pretty soon, and you can probably guess, that this is Frank. So originally, Frank was just going to be in this room, kind of like bricked up in a wall.
Yeah.
And when New World gave him more money, they said, hey, let's do something more spectacular with this, you know, Frank situation here. And Bob Keen and Jeff Portis, who were working as Image Animation Studios with their special effects team, they had like maybe 10 or 12 members on the team, they devised this whole situation for Frank's rebirth.
Oh, man.
And this is all pretty grotesque.
This is pretty disgusting.
Yeah. These poor rats are like, oh, my God, what is going on?
And so that's...
Here's a brain, Nicole.
That looks...
It's like boogers and snot.
Oh. And lasagna.
Lasagna.
Like with melted cheese.
Delicious melted cheese.
Yeah. I'm choosing to think of it. Ooh.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I don't like that mucusy stuff like
that. Delicious.
There.
Look at that. That's just lick that off the floor.
That's going to make me queasy.
Yeah. No. No, no. You're fine. But yeah, of course, a lot of this special effects wise was shot in reverse. So you see things kind of, you know, like would be melting, you know, yeah, would be kind of the opposite effect. And they would, you know, show it in reverse then. And it looks like Frank is then being reborn, rebuilt, being reassembled as a living being.
Yeah.
So, yeah, also.
What's going on there?
What are you talking about?
Are they flirting?
There's a little bit of weird flirting. Yeah, this guy does this weird thing with the cigarette. I don't know. It's strange. A lot of the actors in the movie were British, but then were redubbed because, again, you know, like Americans have an aversion to anything other than American things. Even though everyone I know loves the British accent, especially the ladies love the British accent, including you, Nicole. So, yeah, I don't know why they had to, like, overdub
like proper English speaking.
I'm so sorry, Nicole. But, yes, I don't understand why, you know, they had to overdub some of these actors that, you know, are from England. Julia uses her actual voice, but, yeah, some of these other actors are British, but then are overdubbed. Specifically the Kirsty kind of boyfriend love interest guy there. So, yeah, we have this whole housewarming dinner party thing. Julia's going to bed because she can't stop thinking about Frank. She doesn't care about Larry's bloody hand anymore.
Yeah. It's her house, and she's going to bed even though there's still people in her house?
She's going to bed. Is that rude, Nicole?
I think that's rude.
Huh. Okay.
I think that's rude.
I think that's
a little rude. I mean, if she has to go to work the next day, and, like, it's understood that the people, like, can stay as long as they want, but, you know, I don't know. I think it's rude.
Just rude. You would never, Nicole.
I would never.
We would never even have that housewarming party, though. I'm kidding. Julia making her way back upstairs here. We'll see what happens with this, Nicole.
They probably should have gotten rid of that mold. That's probably not that healthy, right? You're right.
That does look like some sort of black mold up there on the wall. Yeah, that can't be good for anyone. I'm sure this room, though, is filled with it.
They need to, like, bust some or spray bleach all over it and put some kills on there.
Uh-huh. Okay, Nicole. Whatever you say. I think the door in this room, too, like behind Julia there, when she closes the door, is, I think there's like a ton of like moisture damage on that door on the interior, too. I think you see that in some of the shots.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good. You're right. They should not be breathing this.
Ew.
And yeah, now Julia sees this the rats crawling around in this pile of goo on the floor. And something has grabbed her. This apparently was a child in a little suit that they hired for, you know, just this, that shot to be crawling across the floor like that.
A poor child. I bet the child was scarred or something. Scarred for life. Probably.
In the Frank suit. So, this is no longer Sean Chapman, the actor playing Frank. This is now Oliver Smith, who plays Frank the Monster.
Okay. Is he going to grow more skin?
I can't tell you that. See, it doesn't look very good here.
Yeah, he doesn't look very healthy.
And here he's told Julia that he is Frank.
She doesn't want to believe it.
Well, her lover is now some weird skinless monster. And yes, of course, Frank's explaining that Larry's blood brought him back by soaking into the floorboards. It's a good thing that party's still carrying on downstairs. Yeah. So they can't hear any of the Frank business going on upstairs.
She got all tipsy.
Chrissy's a little tipsy here. She had a little something to drink. And gooey Frank.
Gooey Frank.
He's pretty gooey, Nicole.
Yeah.
So if you were Doug Bradley, would you have chosen the moving man or would you have chosen to play the lead Cenobite, Nicole?
Well, I think the lead Cenobite is way more, like, scary and powerful role.
A lot more interesting than playing that moving man. Come on. So here, Frank
is more.
Telling Julia that, you know, the blood brought him back this far. He needs her to bring him more of something. More blood.
More blood? Oh.
Julia definitely seems to be a little shaken up about
everything
that's been going on here. Luckily, gentleman caller.
I thought for sure that she was going to try to get her up there.
You thought that was it for Kirstie right there?
Yeah.
Frank, disappointed, closing the door.
Don't come back in until you have me more.
Give me some blood, Julia, or get the hell out of here.
That's right.
We'll never have sex on your wedding dress again. And we have this odd character back here in the doorway. And it's one of those characters that's never explained. He reappears during the movie in a couple of different portions. And I remember my brother-in-law, Jim, saying at one point when he was talking about the movie, that apparently, like, maybe he and some of his friends were having a discussion, and it was theorized that maybe that character was supposed to be either Jesus Christ or Satan, like one or the other, kind of like on Earth, kind of like witnessing these proceedings. And really, Clive Barker says that, you know, hey, not every character needs to be explained. I feel like, you know, it's nice. There should be an element of mystery. So that's up to the viewer to decide whatever they think that character is.
And that's always my problem with Clive Barker.
Is things aren't explained. Everything needs to be pointed out for Nicole.
You know,
I'm teasing. That's not true.
I might just need a little more.
A little more detail sometimes.
A little more.
But come on, this movie gives you a good amount of detail. It just doesn't tell you who that guy is.
So you can thank whoever you want to.
That's right. He is whoever you want him to be. Julie, again, lying in bed, obsessing over Frank, their past sexual encounters. And then she goes upstairs to see gooey Frank in person. And she agrees to help him. How?
I guess she's just going to kill her husband or something.
Now, you're jumping to conclusions here, Nicole.
I guess. He's all mucusy.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I don't know why she's not kissing him right now. Yeah. Why isn't she kissing all over him? Just because he's all gooey?
Was she not attracted to him now?
Yeah, that's just terrible. This kind of weird, cursed-y dream sequence here.
Yeah. I think the floating feathers are a nice touch, though.
Yeah, it looks good. It looks good on film, doesn't it? These candles. Again, even if this scene doesn't make any sense, it looks nice.
Yeah.
Clive Barker's visual flair. So what was that, Nicole? I feel like it's a little foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Man, did Kirstie just go right to this guy's place and sleep with him? What's going on here?
I thought for a second they had twin beds.
That's what it looked like to me, too. Here we go. Larry's answering the phone again. Kirstie's calling him in the middle of the night again. And after this nightmare she has, I guess she just has to make sure that he's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure he's fighting a horrible hangover right now. After that party. Frank. Ugh. Lurking up on the stairs. Oh.
Getting goo everywhere.
Getting his goo everywhere. That sounded dirtier than I meant it to sound. But yeah. Here we have Julia. Leaving the house all gussied up, Nicole, as they say. Poppy's enjoying the movie as well. So we've got Julia here with these gigantic star earrings at the bar here. Trying to, I guess, yeah, pick this guy up. She's going to pick him up.
So she just needs anybody's blood.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be Larry's blood. Well, I guess.
I thought it had to be a familial link.
No, I don't think so. Okay, after a little poppy break, we're back at 34:55. 35 right now, 35 minutes into the movie, just to make sure that we're still synced up. The gentleman that Julia brought home just kissed her.
She's acting a little cold.
Well, Julia is a little cold. She has him in the house here. And the idea is, they're going to have sex. So he's getting frustrated right now because, yeah, she's not seemingly very willing. Because, of course, that's not her intention, Nicole.
Yeah.
How's that again?
Yeah.
Yes.
She's just wanting to lead him upstairs.
Upstairs? Hmm.
You know, she probably should have just pushed him in there first. Because yeah. It doesn't look good. And then just slammed the door. Good.
So yeah, I think he's a little concerned. There's no bed.
It's a pretty disgusting room.
I guess we could just do it here on the floor in this room filled with mold and mildew. Sure.
Yeah.
What do you think of her earrings here, Nicole? Do you like these big star earrings?
Those are like, those are 80s earrings.
Totally 80s. Very flashy, yeah. 80s earrings.
My mom probably still has some like that in her jewelry box.
You think so?
Yeah.
So, Julia, she goes out and she gets these men and brings them home. I guess they're supposed to be, you know, just kind of naughty businessmen.
I like that. Naughty businessmen.
Naughty businessmen that she wrangles up to deliver to Frank. Yeah, see, look at that door. That looks terrible.
Yeah, that looks pretty bad.
He's got some nice little undies on there.
Yeah.
He's looking good here.
He could take his socks off.
No, he's going to leave those socks on, Nicole. Oh my gosh. Now he's got to go have a tinkle, Nicole.
Yeah.
I don't think Frank is going to allow this to happen.
No. Oh, she's killing him.
How's that again, Nicole? Jeez. Oh my god, his teeth, Nicole.
Oh no.
He's like, a mess.
You know, why is she the one who's doing this?
Well, I'm afraid, Nicole, that Frank, in his gooey form, he's just not quite strong enough yet.
He's just too feeble.
Yeah, he can't do it.
You know, she probably could have done it in a way where she didn't get all bloody.
Well, I guess she didn't think about that. All she thinks about is Frank. Frank says, don't look at me. And then as she starts to leave the room, we're going to cut back to the door here, the interior of the room, or we're going to see him kind of crawling over there. So now he's going to have his way with that guy. Yeah. What's he going to do to him?
I guess drink him.
This is a good shot coming up here, too. Because Julie's covered in this guy's blood. She doesn't want this naughty businessman's blood all over her.
Well,
so yeah, she's going to go over here to the mirror and try to get cleaned up. And yeah, she has this look, you know, and it's just like
crazed.
Yeah. This is what she's gotten herself into now for Frank.
Yeah, she could have washed it off her chest, too.
Yeah, she missed that spot. I guess she was too excited to get back into the room and see what kind of progress Frank has made here. And we see this guy with the murder weapon next to him, the hammer. He's all shriveled up, and there's nothing left of that guy.
Yeah.
Frank sucked out of him whatever he could.
And, like, trailed some slime all over the floor.
Yeah, more of that goo. And now we see Frank standing erect over near the window. So he at least has the power to stand now. But he's still dripping goo everywhere.
Dripping, like, slime and snot-looking stuff.
How would you describe Frank here, Nicole? He's starting to get a little bit more structure.
He's got some sinew on him.
Some sinewy stuff going on.
Yeah.
Come here, damn it, I want to touch you. No, I don't want you to touch me. You're all gooey.
Oh, man.
There's the first time we hear the line, come to daddy, right there.
Oh, man. He's going right for breast.
Right for the boob. Yep. Gooey Frank, right for the boob. And now Larry's arrived at the house. What's she going to do now?
I don't know.
There's a dead guy in here. Skinless Frank is in there. She still has blood all over herself.
Yep.
Here's Larry looking around. Where the hell is Julia? What's going on? Where's she even taking him? What's she going to do with this body?
I don't know.
I guess she feels like she has to hide it somewhere. Just leaving it in that room wasn't good enough.
She has to put it in a different room.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a close call, Nicole.
Yeah. She needs to get cleaned up.
Larry's hand still bandaged from that horrible accident with the nail.
You know, Larry seems like a nice guy.
He's a nice guy, I'm sure. But he, like I said, he's not nearly as, you know,
exciting
as Frank is. And that's all Julia cares about, Nicole. And yeah, see, now we kind of see her kind of checking herself out here again. This blood on her, but she's doing it for Frank, so it's okay. Now, of course, she has to go back in and check on Frank. And I don't know how she did get...
Gooey.
Yeah, a bunch of goo all over the back of her clothes.
White shirt. I mean, come on. Ew, those veins in his head are freaking me out. They look like worms.
He's got veiny worms in his head, yes.
The Cenobites.
Yeah, and see, there's a mention of the Cenobites. It's the first time that they... the name is dropped, Nicole.
Yeah.
The Cenobites are going to be looking for him. It's only a matter of time, Nicole, until they find him. Put on some music, Nicole. Have you ever said that to me?
No.
If you do, I'll know that you got Skinless Frank somewhere in the house. And yeah, she's basically offering, well, and Frank's demanding, really, her obedience here. And of course, she's very willing because she's rubbing his skinless finger on her lips. So apparently an actual pet store here, Nicole. And they had to shoot very early in the morning before business hours.
Yeah.
They only had like a few hours to get this whole thing in. But here we see this guy again. This kind of homeless vagrant character.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to be eating something. And it looks like there are crickets. And she says, give those back. His hand's also very, very dirty, along with his face, Nicole.
I think crickets are supposed to be a great source of protein.
Delicious,
delicious protein. Do you remember? We watched a show about crickets.
Yeah.
I think it was the Jeff Goldblum
show. Yeah, the Jeff Goldblum show on Disney Plus. Yeah, it was talking about how, you can eat crickets for protein,
Yeah. So it's probably good for him.
It's totally good for him. He knows what he's doing.
That's right.
Here's this other guy again. He's always lurking around, too. You think he's a secret villain, Nicole?
I don't know.
Nah, probably not. And that mystery man has disappeared.
Yeah, I do think that...
Does he ever see him? The boyfriend guy here, the love interest, does he ever see that guy?
Or is it just Kirstie? I don't think he saw him. I think it's just her.
Must just be Kirstie. Oh, here's Julia with another guy. This guy looks like he's out of an 80s band or something.
Yeah.
An 80s new wave band. He too, falling prey to Frank here. At least Frank can kind of manhandle him.
Yeah.
Did Julia still have to do the killing, though?
I guess. Her hands were all bloody. She didn't get anything on that white shirt, though. I'm proud of her.
She must just like doing it now. Now she just enjoys killing for Frank. Definitely kind of a wicked stepmother look there, I think.
Yeah. That slicked hair on the sides.
Mm-hmm. That's what does it, you think?
With the 80s makeup.
Uh-huh.
Totally.
Totally wicked stepmother look, yes. And a smirk, Nicole. She likes it.
Frank's got some clothes now.
Yeah, bloody skinless Frank. He needed a shirt. He must have started getting some feeling back. He's feeling a little chilly. He needs a smoke.
Looks like he's got some skin on his ears now.
Yeah, maybe something there. Or at least some, like, ear cartilage or something. What are ears made of, Nicole?
Cartilage.
Yeah. So that's probably what it
is. Well, the top parts, anyway.
And here he's got the puzzle box, Nicole. He's going to talk to Julia a little bit about the puzzle box here. And yeah, basically, we see some flashes of some Cenobites there.
Oh, that's a creepy one.
So yeah, Frank interested in a little bit of extreme sexuality here. And of course, a lot of Clive Barker's work is very sexual in nature. A lot of kind of like elements of like sexuality. And this movie specifically in the story, a lot of kind of like S&M kind of elements to it, right?
Yeah.
The Cenobites, they'll never find them, Nicole. Yeah, sure. Come on. We know what's going to happen.
I mean, they found him in that very room already once before.
Yeah, so you don't think it should be that difficult for them to locate him again?
I wouldn't think so.
I guess the whole thing right now is they think that they've, you know,
already got him.
Yeah, that he's dead because he was torn apart. So he's not even on their radar right now. So again, yeah, just a few like flashes of Cenobites in that scene just a few moments ago. But that's really all we've seen of them so far.
Yeah.
You got Frank freaking out upstairs here, and Larry hears something. He better calm down if he doesn't want to get caught.
I think he wants to get caught because he wants his wife. He wants her to...
You think he wants to kill Larry?
He might.
Oh, my God.
It would you know, be good for his regenerative. How do you say that? Regenerative. You say it.
How about regeneration?
Yeah.
His regenerative abilities?
It would be good for his regeneration. Now she's has to distract her own husband.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, let's make out real quick here so you forget about hearing Frank upstairs. He's insistent. He has to go upstairs and check out what that noise was. Yeah. Which room was that sound coming from? Let's look in this room. No.
Well, that's where she's hiding the bodies, right?
Yeah, so don't go in that room. No, Larry, don't go in that room. And here Julia is seemingly terrified that he's going to find Frank in this room.
But also, like, she's not stopping him.
No. So maybe she's somewhat hopeful. And yeah, we see here that Frank has killed some rats in the room here. And now Larry thinks he's getting some, so, you know. Who was that? And first, Julia, of course, was trying to distract Larry.
And now she's like, making out with him. Man.
And now she's like,
I don't want to do this.
I don't want to do this. Frank's not going to like this. And where is he? He must be around here somewhere.
Yeah.
And of course, then Frank emerging from the closet, all bloody. I think this whole situation is just too much for Julia. She doesn't want Larry killed right there on top of her. Frank with rat in hand. This just kind of gross. Not a real rat, Nicole, a special effect.
Man, it took him an awful long time to, like, see what was wrong with her, though.
Yeah. All he cared about him was himself, Larry.
Well,
Larry, he's leaving disappointed.
But poor Larry. I mean, I'm glad he didn't bite it right then, you know?
Oh, no, he's still around. That's him. He's fine.
But
still not a great situation.
It's not a good situation. No.
Things are not going well. Hey, the Chinese restaurants we go to have those dragons, Nicole.
Why not?
Yeah.
Those are cool. Well, it's the plague now. We haven't been to anywhere for a long time.
That's true. Maybe by the time we go back to a Chinese restaurant, they will have those dragons, Nicole.
Quarantine will be over.
Yes. Sometime in the next 3 years. So, she doesn't love Larry. But I guess she still has some feelings. Some feelings. For him.
You know, Larry is his brother. Yes. He should have some feelings for him.
He should, yes. But I guess it's the difference between loving Larry and having kind of like the lust, the sexual obsession that she has with Frank, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two distinct different things.
Yeah.
Here we see Kirsty seeing Julia.
Yeah.
Luring someone into the house again.
She's suspicious.
Well, I would think that she should be. This naughty businessman seems somewhat reluctant, Nicole.
Yeah.
Always this disgusting room. Oh my God. I guess if you saw Frank over in the corner like that, you might be a little concerned.
Yeah.
And this poor guy. That poor guy.
Uh-huh.
That's what, the third? The third?
I guess.
Victim, at least on screen, that we've seen for Frank at this point. I should just keep hiding the bodies in the same place.
Who knows?
Are they going to start smelling, Nicole?
I would think so.
Larry's not going to notice it. Now Kirsty going into the house. This is probably not a great idea. I guess she just wants to catch Julia in the act.
I guess so.
And what she thinks is, of course, an act of infidelity, but it's different than...
It's actually murder.
...than what she expects, yes. That is involved, but not on the same level that she's expecting.
Yeah.
And here we see this poor guy with just a slight bit of life left in him, emerging from Frank's room. And now Kirsty knows that it's not just some sort of affair or a fling, because we have skinless Frank right there.
Come to daddy. What the heck?
Yeah. He tells her, flat out, it's Uncle Frank. You have to wonder what Kirstie's thinking here. This skinless man saying
she's
that
thinking, she's his uncle.
And then, essentially, coming on to her here. I got to tell you, it's a pretty awful situation, Nicole.
Yeah. Ew.
I guess that's how you hurt a skinless guy who's not yet complete, is you just start going at their organs. And yeah, she finds the puzzle box and picks it up, and Frank, no, he's not liking this. Yeah. and then throws it out the window. Poor Frank is in a panic. He's lost the puzzle box. Without the puzzle box, he can't kind of contain the Cenobites, I guess. Mm. Kirstie here having these flashbacks from moments ago when skinless Frank is telling her that he's his uncle or he's her uncle. Those poor sisters there.
Those nuns probably should have stopped her.
They probably should have stopped her and tried to get her some help. They did look concerned.
Yeah. She doesn't look good.
No. I think she does have a little bit of blood, on her shirt from Frank. That's a good shot.
That's a good shot.
People just hovering. Yeah. I don't know. I'd be pretty messed up too if I saw Frank.
I think she should have ditched that puzzle box though. I don't think she should have picked it up.
No?
No.
Should have left it out there so Frank could have gotten his hands back on
it. Well, I mean, she picked it up, but then when she was running, she should have thrown it or something.
Just tossed it somewhere.
So nurses in those hats like that kind of freak me out.
Why is that?
Because it's always up to no good.
If they're wearing a hat, they're up to no good?
Like the old days, like when they would wear those hats, it's always like, I don't know. It always seems like they're up to no good.
I don't think this nurse is up to no good, Nicole.
I know.
That is true. Do nurses not wear hats anymore?
Not like that. You wear, like, scrub hats.
Okay.
Or sometimes you, like, during surgery, you wear those shower hats made out of fabric.
Yeah.
Disposable fabrics.
I don't know why you'd have to wear one of those hats anyway that she was wearing.
Well, scrub hats, you know, and to keep debris
right.
off
that seems
your
more
hair
to you.
And to keep your hair from falling into like body cavities and stuff.
More for sanitary reasons. But the nurse that was on the screen here a little earlier, why would you need to wear that sort of a hat?
Yeah, it didn't seem much. It doesn't seem like
doesn't seem much.
Much
of a, it serves any purpose other than just being part of a uniform, you know?
Agreed.
Oh, a little puzzle box with a little melody playing. Some little flashing lights coming off of it.
Oh, it's moving. Oh, no.
That's to get you hooked in, those little flashing lights. See, now she's obsessed with it.
So, is this box... It travels, it opens doorways.
It opens
so
doorways.
To good and bad?
Well.
Mostly bad.
Mostly bad, depending on your perspective and what you're looking for, I suppose. Here's a literal doorway opening, the wall tearing open.
So can you escape that?
Escape
what?
Can
she choose not to go?
Well, I suppose. You won't have to go in there if you didn't want to.
Would you go in if a door opened up in front of you?
Yeah, I guess I'd probably go in there. And then I'd probably be sorry, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Would you? You wouldn't go in there?
Not if it opened up with a bunch of cobwebs in front of it.
But they were gone then. They're not there right now. Look, the puzzle box is moving around. Then suddenly a door opens.
You hear distant screams. I don't know.
Okay, maybe the distant screams would be a little disconcerting. But
I think I'm going out the other doorway.
You're leaving the hospital completely.
That's right. We're going to forget this.
All right. There's also a baby crying, apparently. Maybe she's concerned about the baby. She wants to check on the baby, Nicole. That's also not good. What is that?
Uh-oh.
Now, if you see that in the doorway, Nicole,
yeah,
then that's when you know, yes, you better get the hell out of there.
You better go.
So this thing is apparently called the Engineer, Nicole. We keep saying engineer on a lot of episodes lately.
It's kind of reoccurring.
Yeah. But this is, yes, this is apparently called the Engineer, and I don't know what purpose it serves. Just one of those weird monster characters that pops up in this movie. Chasing Kirstie down a hallway. And then back into the hospital room, and the door's sealed. It's gone, Nicole.
Okay. Well.
So now what do you think about this door? The box is still twisted into that kind of diamond formation.
Mm-hmm. I think she needs to leave it alone.
Better stop messing with it.
Yeah. See? She's opening up another.
That's a pretty good look there. The kind of the wall tiles kind of blackening and the light coming through them. She doesn't like the looks of that. Yeah, some good weird television squeaking sounds. Yeah.
That... You know, IV bag. Oh, man.
And now, yeah, now we start to see some of these Cenobites appearing. First have the chattering Cenobite there.
That chattering, that Cenobite right there, that freaks me out.
That one freaks you out. And yeah, here, yeah, the chatterer played by Nicholas Vince. And there, of course, you have the lead Cenobite, Pinhead, Butterball. And we have the lead Cenobite speaking, and the chattering Cenobite certainly appears to be the muscle, Nicole.
Yeah.
The Butterball Cenobite, played by Simon Bamford, who is also in Clive Barker's Nightbreed. I think Nicholas Vince was, too, the chatterer. He may have been in there as well. And then Grace Kirby as the female Cenobite. With that whole open neck wound.
Yeah. And facial piercings.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, this was 1987. So, you know, you didn't have a lot of, you know, piercings. Body piercings and things like that.
Modifications. Yeah. There.
And here Kirstie's basically begging for them to take a pass on her by talking about Frank, trying to bring up Frank. And yeah, you know, the Pinhead's like, no way. So she's using Frank as a bargaining chip.
Yeah.
Well. You can take him instead of me. And this next line of dialogue, this is one of my favorites right here, so I'm going to be quiet for a second.
Okay.
That's pretty threatening,
Nicole. That's pretty threatening.
Pretty threatening.
His teeth are kind of dirty.
They were a little dirty. But yeah, there finally you got to see some of the Cenobites in action. Doug Bradley, as Pinhead, the lead Cenobite, said that when he first got the makeup applied, he had to, you know, just kind of stare in the mirror for a while and study himself and kind of see who this person was. Because, like, he could see his mouth, he could see his eyes, but, like, everything else he said seemed foreign to him.
Yeah.
It seemed, you know, like a totally different person. So he would sit there and kind of, like, raise an eyebrow and, like... you know, just kind of see what kind of facial things he could do with himself as an actor under all the makeup.
I think you'd have to play with it a little bit because, yeah, your expressions would be, you know, different or muted with all the makeup, you know?
Yeah. Apparently, every time he had to go in to do the makeup, it was a 6-hour process.
Oh, wow.
To apply the makeup.
I always forget how long it takes to do those. So, yeah. You know? It
takes a very long time.
Like how early they'd have to get on set.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it was Simon Bamford, who plays Butterball, saying that Nicholas Vince, who plays the chattering Cenobite, was always like a morning person and would get there really early on the set and he would be all jovial and excited and everybody else was like, oh, we're so tired. We're so tired. Leave us alone. Oh my God. So Julia now, finally getting her way here.
Yeah.
Because clearly something has happened with Frank and Larry. So there we were, Craig rambling over a very important part of the movie. But, of course, more will be revealed here. And basically, Julia's like, oh, here's another victim for Frank. Here we go. We'll get Kirstie out of the way, too. And here, this is where Andrew Robinson, the actor, gets to, like, totally change roles. Because he's, you know...
Because he's now Frank.
Yeah, early on, yeah, he's you know, as Larry, is, you know, kind of this totally different, you know, nice character. And then here, as an actor, yeah, he gets to take on this whole different identity. So, yeah, like, almost like two different movies for him.
Yeah.
Two different roles. But you can't see, like, some of this, like, grossness on him here.
His neck meat's all torn up.
Yeah, his neck meat around his hairline, like, it's all weird. Gooey. It's, again, gooey. Mm-hmm. Everything's gooey with this Frank guy. Put out of his misery like a mad dog. So basically, he's saying that he's killed Frank. He's gotten rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
But as the viewer, I feel like we suspect something else, Nicole.
Yeah.
So 113.20 is where we are.
That was kind of a insipid look.
Uh-huh. We have Andrew Robinson as Larry, as Frank, adjusting his eye skin here at the mirror. That's where we are visually right now. And now, yeah, here's Frank, skinless, lying on the floor. Except for, of course...
It's not Frank.
It's really Kirstie's father laying here skinless on the floor. The Cenobites reappearing here. And Kirstie still thinks, yes, that her father has killed Frank. So when the Cenobites say they want the man who did this, who they really want, of course, is Frank. Just one happy family, Nicole. Oh, see?
Mm.
There he just pretty he much just revealed. Gave he it just gave away. It away. Come to daddy. What a creep, Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, his face skin is ruined now. How can he hide from the Cenobites like that? So now they're just going to kill Kirstie, I guess. Oh. There's a turn in their relationship right there, Nicole.
Yep.
And look!
He's sucking her blood.
Yeah. He stabbed her, so he's like, well, you know, may as well just go ahead and use you.
Nothing personal.
Yeah, nothing personal. Let me just suck the rest of the life out of you. Try to strengthen myself up a little bit more.
Will it heal his neck or his skin? No.
This Frank, Nicole, I tell you. Some pretty cold character.
Mm-hmm.
He's going after his niece. Now, Kirstie should probably remember that the Cenobites were upstairs. Maybe if she's smart...
She should lead Frank back to them. Yeah,
exactly. But instead, she went in the other room.
And she's going to find all the other bodies or something.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Who knows?
That never happens in horror movies.
Oh, man.
Oh, no, that's just Jesus falling out of there.
That was a jump scare.
That was a jump scare, yeah.
A you Jesus were, jump scare.
Jesus jump scare. You were totally terrified by the Jesus jump scare. I don't know. Andrew Robinson is reskinned Frank kind of freaks me out here.
Couldn't handle that skin flapping on my face. I'd have to pull that off.
Of course, you'd just have to tear it off, but that's how you are. Yeah, you would have that torn off and probably in your mouth, eating it. Oh, there's one.
Oh, no. See?
Yeah.
Maggoty.
Maggoty bodies.
All those maggots went down her top.
Isn't that great?
No.
No. Okay. You know, Kirstie's seen a lot at this point. Is she going to be okay?
No.
I don't think so.
He needs some years of therapy after
this. Yeah, I don't think I would be okay after all that.
Otherworldly people.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
In S&M gear.
Yeah.
Your father was killed, but his skin is on another man. Your uncle, who's coming after you and wants to molest you. Your crazy stepmother, Who knows what's going on with her right now? Because I don't know. I guess she did see
that. Why is he coming out of that room? Shouldn't the Cenobites have gotten him since he was in that room? Or will they only come out when Kirstie's in there?
Oh, poor dead Larry on the floor.
Yep.
Frank's such a despicable man. And now, oh yeah, he seems something familiar here.
Uh-huh.
These lights coming through the walls. And oh my God, some Cenobites, Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
Grace Kirby, the female Cenobite, apparently did not appreciate how she looked at all in the makeup. I guess it was very upsetting for her. So she opted not to return for the sequel. A different actor played that character in the sequel because she was just too upset about having to wear the makeup.
Yeah.
Which I could see. I could see that having kind of a profound effect on you as an actor.
I don't think I'd like it.
Yeah. And yeah, both the Butterball Cenobite and the Chatterer Cenobite were both blind on set. Neither one of them could actually see anything.
Oh, out of their costumes?
Yes, they had to be led around. Yeah. Yeah, so Frank was set up here by Kirstie. And he's not appreciating it. But yeah, the Cenobites are allowing her to leave. They're basically saying, you know, well, they said, you know, this isn't for your eyes. You know, you should leave the room.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, those fishhook things really, like, disturb me.
Yep. Looks pretty painful. The Cenobites having their way with Frank one more time, Nicole. And yeah, we're coming to a pretty grisly scene here coming up that was actually cut short to maintain the R rating. And even the R rating, like, it's pretty grisly. So yeah, he's Clive Barker had written the line for him to say here, "Fuck you," but instead Andrew Robinson said this would be a better line. And they went with this in the movie.
I think he should have said, "Come to Daddy."
So, pretty graphic. Mm-hmm. Frank is torn apart there.
Why didn't she leave? She should have gotten out earlier.
She should have left before that, yeah. They said it wasn't for her eyes, but she stayed there and watched it.
Cenobites saying you could leave, you should have just
You should left. Probably taken him up on it, yeah. And now, you've got the female Cenobite blocking her path from going down the stairs.
Uh-huh.
What remains of Julia there, I guess, in that bed.
Yeah.
With the puzzle box. So how do you put the Cenobites back when you've got them out, Nicole? That's what she's trying to figure out here. Doug Bradley looking so regal there in his pins, Nicole.
No, don't do that. How'd she know what to do?
I don't know. Clive Barker doesn't explain that, Nicole. So you always see both the lead Cenobite and the female Cenobite flashing out of this existence from the look of it.
Uh-huh.
Christie's love interest pounding on the door trying to get in there. The house falling apart, just crumbling.
Oh, man. Oh, no.
And the chattering Cenobite there.
Why does it have a veil on?
Oh, just for fun. It's a good visual effect. No, he's the muscle. You can't do that. That one also eliminated. So just the butterball remaining. And that always disturbs me, because the Butterball Cenobite just kind of gets, like, crushed under some ceiling.
And he's still there.
And doesn't appear to actually get sent away by the box or anything. It always kind of bothers me a little bit. It doesn't seem fair. Oh my god, that engineer thing is back. With its weird scorpion tail thing or something.
Yep.
Is it trying to reclaim the box? What's going on there? Maybe not one of the best effects in the movie, this thing and its arms and stuff.
Yeah.
A little rubbery looking. But, you know, this was 1987. It's a long time ago now, Nicole. Yeah, that box, like, you could see, and yeah, the engineer is sent away there. But this box, yeah, it looks a little different. Apparently there were something like 8 different puzzle boxes constructed for the movie, apparently. Simon Sace, who worked with Image Animation, was the person who actually designed the puzzle boxes. And he said in an interview that he wishes he had gotten some sort of royalties out of the deal, because,
yeah, you
know,
I mean,
since then, the puzzle box, there have been, like, you know, models and toys made of it and stuff like that. And
yeah, there's like 3 right there.
He'd probably be rolling in the cash.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Image Animation people also said that they loved, you know, going to, like, the corner drugstore to pick up, you know, more condoms and KY jelly all the time, because they needed them for special effects. They needed the KY jelly to goo things up on Frank and other things. And condoms, they use those a lot of time in special effects, too, because they'll fill them with a liquid and then, you know, they'll burst and things like that.
Yeah.
So apparently one of them went and they were buying so many of them that the person working there said, "Oh, are you going to, you know, some kind of party or something?" And they're like, yeah, I'm going to a party. Yeah.
I was going to say, you should probably get rid of that box, right? What's going to happen?
There's a random burning chair there.
Yeah.
Just in the middle of this empty.
I think that adds, that definitely.
You like
nice.
That? Uh-huh. So she's going to toss it in the fire here.
Yeah, but what happens to it?
What happens to it if it's burned up in the fire?
I mean, is that a way to get rid of it, or is that a bad thing?
I don't know, Nicole. There are sequels.
Uh-oh, here's Jesus again.
Here comes Jesus Christ across this, I don't know what this is, some sort of abandoned lot.
Yeah, I can see
that. With bonfires.
I can see that working out. Because he looked in on her.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. Then you have this whole situation. And now, this vagrant burning away picks up the puzzle box and now becomes some sort of a Winged bony dragon.
Okay. And so, now? So probably not Jesus then.
Probably not, Nicole. And now the puzzle box back on this table.
And are those bugs there too?
Yeah, a couple of roaches or something there. Someone else's hand, we presume, on the table here, about to make a deal, not Frank. And there we have it. We roll to the credits, Nicole.
Okay.
And that was Hellraiser. You know, did you know, Nicole, did you know that at one point there was a company called Color Dreams that was developing a Hellraiser video game for the Nintendo Entertainment System back in the day?
No.
How do you think that would have turned out? I don't know. You know, they did have a Friday the 13th game. They had a Nightmare on Elm Street game on that system. So, yeah, you know.
Just cashing in on the horror movie games.
Gotta cash in on the horror movies.
Sure thing.
But yes, that company, Color Dreams, before they finished the game, changed their name to Wisdom Tree and started making Christian-themed Nintendo games.
Well, maybe so they watched Hellraiser too many times.
Maybe so. Quite a different turn. Quite a turn they took there. And Poppy just got back out of bed.
Yeah, she's awake.
She's ready to do some more eating or talking. We'll find out. She might have a little something to eat. We'll see. Maybe not. No. She's
just going to walk around.
She's going to have a little stretch and walk around for a little bit. Which is what we're going to need to do after watching Hellraiser here.
Yeah.
For an hour and 34 minutes almost. Did you have a good time watching Hellraiser, Nicole?
Yeah, it was a little different doing the talking during.
Yeah, doing the talking during.
Yeah. So.
If you were to amass or murder Hellraiser, Nicole, what do you think you'd do with this one?
It's not my favorite.
Why? Why isn't it your favorite, Nicole?
I don't know. It's too gooey.
Too gooey for Nicole.
Yeah. I prefer Nightbreed.
You prefer Nightbreed over this one.
Okay. Definitely prefer Nightbreed.
I think I do prefer Hellraiser, but that's just my personal taste.
Yeah.
But I would definitely amass it. So you're saying you would murder Hellraiser?
No, I'm not going to murder it because I would watch it again.
Oh, you want to watch it again? Let's watch it right now again.
Not right now.
Okay. All right. Well.
So it's amassed for later viewing.
It's amassed. So do you think the Summer of Clive is finally dead and buried after this, Nicole?
No, I'm sure we're going to watch more sometime.
You think we're going to get back to it?
Sure.
At some point, you know, we're going to have to talk about at least like a few of the Hellraiser sequels. We're gonna have to talk about Hellbound Hellraiser 2 at some point because I really enjoy that one.
Okay.
So yes, we'll get around to that at some point.
Okay.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us for the Hellraiser watch along. We hope you enjoyed it at least a little bit. Maybe we gave you some information that you hadn't heard before. And yeah, like we said, it's available on Hulu. So maybe you watched it with us on Hulu. Maybe you didn't. Maybe you just decided to listen. Maybe you've seen Hellraiser enough times, like me, that you can just visualize it in your head as we were talking about it.
Maybe
I've probably
so.
Seen it at least 20 times, Nicole.
Wow.
Wow.
I've probably seen it 3.
All right. Well, thanks, listeners, for listening. We're going to sign off. And this was our letter H, Nicole.
Yeah.
For the 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival. Definitely Hellraiser, a headliner in the festival, Nicole.
Yes.
We certainly gave it its own episode here.
Absolutely.
Man. Thank you, listeners. Good night.
Good night.
taking him back instead of me.
Perhaps we prefer you.
I want to hear him confess himself. Then, maybe... maybe...
But if you cheat us...
we'll tear your soul apart.